to read an opening script or just transfer you through?
Just transfer us in.
Okay, I'll let you know as soon as you're live.
Thanks.
And your line is now live. Please go ahead.
Okay, good morning, everyone. Glad that everyone found the room. I spent some time downstairs and upstairs with all the kids, but we all found our so we all found where we're supposed to be. This is the steering committee in-person meeting number 2 for establishing a measurement framework for multiple chronic conditions. Welcome. We have a big, long day in front of us. We're going to be working hard because this is our last in-person meeting, and we really need to make progress. We have made substantial progress, so thanks to everyone who in the summer has been giving up their time and being on conference calls. I think we've gotten through a lot of material. And thank the staff who's done a wonderful job of trying to vet in other arenas what we're doing and work with us and come up with information that we can react to and work with. So I think we're going to start with introductions. There are some people who are here for the first time, and I have to say I don't remember everyone either. So if you can just say your name and sort of what you represent, that will be helpful. So.
Hello, I'm Sina Haynes. I'm from Palm Beach Atlantic University Gregory School of Pharmacy. I'm the Associate Dean for Faculty and a Clinical Practitioner at the Diabetes Education Research Center. I'm happy to be here in person.
I'm Andrew Fuscioni, and I'm Chair of Rehabilitation Science at George Mason University, and by clinical background, I'm a physical therapist.
Good morning. I'm Daniel Foreman. I'm from Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston. I'm a cardiologist. I have a strong interest in geriatric cardiology.
Hello, I'm Dr. Michael Farber. I'm full-time a faculty at University of Vermont College of Medicine in the Department of Medicine and Pediatrics. I serve as the Medical Director.
Good morning. My name is Leona Cutler. I'm the Director of the Center for Child Health and Policy at Rainbow Babies and Children's Hospital, Case Western Reserve University. I'm a pediatrician and pediatric endocrinologist.
I'm Cynthia Boyd. I am from Johns Hopkins University, and I am in the Departments of Medicine and Health Policy and Management, and I am a geriatrician.
Good morning. I'm Karen Adams. I'm Vice President of National Priorities at NQF, and I just want to thank everyone for all the hard work in rolling up the sleeves over the summer. I know NQF has been asking a lot of you, not only on this committee, but I know many of you are contributing to our other work, so allow me to extend that thank you to you.
Yes, I'm Caroline Blum. I'm a geriatrician at University of Michigan, and I am the co-chair of the committee.
I'm a medical social worker by training, and I'm the other co-chair of the committee.
Aisha Pittman, Senior Program Director at NQF, and I just wanted to, again, share the same thanks as Karen for all your time and hard work.
I am Joe DeFlavor. I'm a pediatric hematologist oncologist, and I'm the clinical director of St. Jude Children's Research Hospital.
Hi, I'm Q. Lee. I'm an internist and pediatrician, and I'm the chief health director at IBM.
I'm Barbara Turner. I'm a general internist health services researcher. I'm new and in San Antonio, where I head a new research center that's a collaboration of the School of Public Health, School of Medicine, and a safety nest hospital there called REACH.
I'm Margaret Campbell. I'm a palliative care researcher at Wayne State University and by practice, I'm a nurse practitioner.
I'm Robert Rosati. I'm from the Center for Home Care Policy and Research at the Visiting Nurse Service of New York.
I'm Jeff Thompson. I'm the Chief Medical Officer for Washington State Medicaid.
I'm Kaki, I'm a cardiologist at Health Partners and also medical director for Evidence-Based Health.
I'm Gail Hunt. I'm the CEO of the National Alliance for Caregiving, which is an organization that focuses on family caregiving research primarily, and I'm also on the board of PCORI, the Patient-Centered Outcomes Research Institute.
I'm Emma Hu with the Pacific Business Group on Health.
All right, we have our Hopkins group in the back. Could you introduce yourself? All right. If we could have the first few slides, we're going to go review our meeting objectives for the day. And I think everybody has the handouts, if you want to write on them. And as you can see, our objectives for the day are to finalize the definition of multiple chronic conditions. We've spent a lot of time on this, and we'll be spending some more time. We're going to establish the guiding principles for measurement, finalize the multiple chronic conditions conceptual model, prioritize key measure concept areas, and the staff will have us running here, so that'll be good, and discuss the path forward and policy implications of the framework that we are developing. We want to remind everybody about our sort of anchoring slides, which sort of tells us what we're going to do. I love this slide, and I refer to it often. And just so that if people haven't thought about it that much, again, this sort of puts everything what we're doing sort of in the national context, where we're working the top one, the top blue one, with the Department of Health and Human Services and their National Quality Strategy and Partnership for Patients. Then we are working within the public-private sector framework, where we want to be speaking to some of their issues with the National Priorities Partnership and NQF. And then we come down to the NQF-endorsed Multiple Chronic Conditions Framework, and that's what we're working on today, definitions, domains, key methodologies, guiding principles, and the path forwards, many of which we will be tackling today, although not for the first time. And finally, the whole reason we're doing this are multiple intended uses of the NQF-endorsed Multiple Chronic Conditions Framework. And again, we'll be devoting sort of the end of the day to this, but everything from input to HHS, to research, a roadmap for new delivery models. Our framework will be used for many things, and we have to keep that in mind because we have many audiences and many stakeholders. So, again, as I talked about that. So let's move on to finalizing the definition of multiple chronic conditions. And the way I want to handle this, there are several slides that relate to that in your handouts, and we might probably be going back and forth with the slides from slide 6 to 17. Slide 6 to 9. So a few slides, but a lot of discussion. Let's put it that way. What I want to do now, I want us all to sort of carefully and precisely, I'm sure everyone here has already read this, but we're going to go through this definition. And then before we react to it, I'm going to ask staff to tell us the history. Even though it's only a history of a few months, it has quite an extensive history of being vetted and discussed and brought out in multiple areas. So let's just start going through it. We begin with the sort of the main definition that then has components. So the main definition is persons with multiple chronic conditions are defined as having two or more concurrent chronic conditions that collectively have a significant adverse effect on health status, function, or quality of life, and that require complex health care management or coordination. In the context of this definition, chronic conditions encompass a spectrum of disease and other clinical, behavioral, and developmental conditions. Additionally, the social context in which a person lives, such as homelessness, is also considered an important influencing factor. A complication associated with a primary diagnosis would also meet the requirement of two or more concurrent conditions. such as cystic fibrosis in children with an associated complication such as pancreatic insufficiency. Assessment of the quality of care provided to the MCC population should consider measures targeting two or more concurrent chronic conditions requiring ongoing clinical, behavioral, or developmental care from trained professionals, and that act together to significantly increase the complexity of management and coordination of care, including but not limited to potential interactions between conditions and treatments. Importantly, from an individual's perspective, this would affect functional roles and health outcomes across the lifespan, compromise life expectancy, and hinder a patient's ability to self-manage or a family or caregiver's capacity to assist in that individual's care. And finally, the remembering that quality of care is defined by the IOM 6 aims, safe, timely, effective, efficient, equitable, and patient-centered, and behavioral includes mental health and substance use illness. So as we reflect on this fairly complex definition, although again, the first slide, slide 6, is pretty simple. The first piece of it is, to me, relatively simple, and then it sort of gets explained. I'm going to ask Karen and the other staff to sort of tell us the history of how we got here. It does sort of begin with the ARC definition, and we talked about that the last visit, and I think that was a good place to begin. But I think it went on from there.
And Nadine, may I ask you to go back to the first slide 6, which would be the kind of our grounding definition, slide 6. So I wanted to trace a bit of the history and first thank everyone because I know we've gotten a lot of feedback along the way with iteration. And what we're trying to do here as we start to build the framework report, we're also putting some narrative around things that start to capture some of the important distinctions that have been discussed amongst the group. But I was struck when we were on a call with our Hopkins colleagues, and we kind of mentioned, I think it was Bruce, you know, what's the elevator speech here? We really should have something that's crisp and succinct. And so you'll see that on this slide, we have footnotes. This isn't to say that these important distinctions in number 1 and 2 are footnoted, but it's more to say that we have a report that will have narrative, that will bring out these important distinctions. We will further, of course, you'll be feeding into that report, but we really need something, particularly as HHS goes along with their work and with work that's being done with the Measure Application Partnership, you know, to have this kind of crisp definition. And then when we progress to the slide that starts to get into the more details, the narrative in the report will start to play that out. So I did want to kind of discuss that evolution because from our first meeting, and you know, you had spoken to that, what's the overarching definition that we can hold on to, and then here are some of the important distinctions, and then, you know, we would say that. So just a little bit of history there. But I think as this was developed, our Hopkins team had keyed up for us, you know, in the HHS multiple chronic conditions framework. It was defined as two or more chronic conditions, and there was something that we didn't disagree with, but we didn't find that perhaps as satisfying. And then we looked to the ARC definition, and we thought, how can we build on this, and how can we further elaborate on some of these core concepts that we hold true, you know, particularly around functional status, and that this really expands beyond the walls of the clinical setting, particularly when you consider, you know, psychosocial context. So we had our first meeting. The ARC definition was brought up as a starting point, and we started to further elaborate and fine-tune then. That definition then was brought back to the group after our breakout session, but then between that meeting and our last webinar, this was sent out to the group for comment, and staff did our best to capture some of these core concepts, and that was sent out again. So this has had kind of multiple iterations, and we're hopeful now that certainly we want discussion on any red flags and anything that would you feel that would cause confusion, but that, you know, we're hopeful that we've heard your voice and that this is based on, I would say, at least 4 rounds of vetting. And so we hope we have it right now and that we wouldn't, you know, have to go back to square one. So I really appreciate everyone's input, and certainly there are some, I guess, kind of key themes that surface that, you know, we want this to be able to speak to many populations. We want this to speak to pediatrics. We want this to speak to geriatrics, but we also want it to speak in between. And I think our 3 case studies were helpful for that when we did our webinar. So we want to make sure that In the narrative, we do bring out that this is a definition for across populations. So thank you.
One question though, didn't you take it to other groups, NAP?
Oh, thank you. That's very, pardon me. So we do have the opportunity, and as we talk to our grounding slide, you know, where we fit in the broader policy context, and we have taken this to the dual eligible group that's working with our Measure Applications Partnership. And I want to say that overall it was very well received. They were very pleased to see the emphasis on functional status and patient-reported outcomes. There's a lot of synergy. We have invited for the policy discussion our staff who's leading that to share with you some of their work and how, you know, if both these groups are bringing this back to HHS, there's a lot of synergy. So we vetted it with the dual eligible group. They further amplified, as our groups had, things around substance abuse and mental health, and they were pleased to see that this group also gave that attention. There was also emphasis on certainly life expectancy is important, but in a context of recovery for substance use illness, and also the pediatric perspective was raised. I think they were quite pleased with that. We've also have taken this to the National Priorities Partnership, who is providing input to HHS on the goals around the National Quality Strategy. This is very in sync, particularly with the population health work group that is emphasizing the behavioral as well as the psychosocial context. So I think what we're trying to share is that these other groups found our definition very useful, very reinforcing, and it gave us some good feedback. But I think that, you know, as a litmus test with some other groups, we're getting a lot of good crossover. Thank you.
I could just 2 points. Sharon, when we discuss this, could you comment, when we present the definition, will all of this be presented together?
And one thing we've done, too, under your tab 2, so if you wanted to see this as a snapshot, how it might be written. So as we see our grounding definition here, you know, this will always come with these two sub-bullets or these two subscripts, so to speak. So this will travel with the definition because we think that that's very important that those distinctions are carried. But we all realize that putting those all in the definition made it a bit too unwieldy. So that will always carry with the subscript. When we go to the slide that starts to speak to specifically, because remember this is a framework to inform performance measurement, and where we speak to assessment of the quality of care around performance measurement, you know, this we see as a supplement to that as well, but you're going to see this played out more in the framework report. But since we've gotten so much good guidance around this, we want to make sure we have this part right, because these were the important, I don't want to say caveats, but these were the high-level things we wanted to emphasize in conjunction with the overarching definition.
And just one practical request for Caroline and myself, could you turn your name tense at an angle? As memory may not serve us always well, so thank you.
That's
why you have social workers.
Okay, so I guess we can open it up for discussion, and I guess actually just general discussion. People have comments and want to reflect on it.
So when we were talking to NHLF on Thursday in preparation for this call, I mentioned these, I think, relatively minor thoughts, which they asked me to bring up today. One was just around, I guess, the slide that is up on the left. I think I know what we all mean, but the part where it says should consider measures targeting two or more chronic conditions, I was a little worried that someone might, on the outside, might interpret that as not including the non-disease-specific measures. And so a couple different ideas of how to fix it, maybe people with two or more chronic conditions, or in some way to sort of make it clear that we don't only mean measures that are sort of specifically driven at two specific, whatever you chose, heart failure and diabetes or whatever. And I think that was pretty clear from our discussion that we wanted those to be included. But we don't mean only non-disease specific. We don't mean only disease.
What is this thing on the left?
That's the That's the part where you're sort of drilling down on measurement.
Okay, so which?
Oh, it's actually the same on both slides now. Now it's actually the same on both slides.
Okay, so that's the quality of care component of it.
Right. And then the on this slide also, I had also understood from listening to people talk that perhaps rather than an and for those three bullets, we meant an or, that it didn't necessarily need to do all three of those things at the same time. And then I had one minor comment on the overarching definition, which was just, and perhaps this is what we mean by complex healthcare management, that I wondered if people felt like the idea that decision-making, like how do you decide whether a potential interaction is important or less important or real or not, I wasn't sure if that decision-making was considered to be part of the complex healthcare management or whether we might want to say decision-making after management explicitly. I wasn't exactly sure what complex healthcare management, now we're on the right, sorry. So function or quality of life that require complex healthcare management or coordination. I was just wondering whether we decision-making was considered to be part of complex healthcare management and whether we thought everyone would sort of know that or whether we wanted to explicitly say decision-making or something like that.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, I think the and or is, you know, fine, trivial. And I like the other 2 points a little more substantive. Do you think that what she's typed in there solves the first point where the chronic conditions?
I mean, I think it's one way. I think there's other possible ways. I did think it was possible someone who hadn't listened to all the conversations wouldn't.
Right, because it does put it in the disease world as opposed to cross-cutting.
Right,
right, right. That's true. It implies that, even though it, to us it doesn't, but yeah,
right.
It implies that.
I was trying to read it with a not having.
Good job. I think the idea of whether we should explicitly say decision making or not is a good one that people can reflect on. Let's get some other points while people are thinking. I think Michael might have had his.
The question I have for the group is of whether when we're talking about substance abuse and mental health, whether in the definition that could be the sole issue. In other words, you could have bipolar disorder and attention deficit, which would be two conditions, and that would be multiple conditions, or you could have schizophrenia and you could have alcoholism. So, you know, for me at least, sometimes let's say the substance abuse is the whole problem. And sometimes it's one that's just affecting a medical condition, like they drink excessively, whereas they have the condition of alcoholism with multiple problems, like alcoholic hepatitis, alcoholic dementia, peripheral neuropathy. So that was my question for the group. Could you, in the definition, should the definition be such that people would think that you could just have mental health and substance abuse, and those would be chronic diseases on their own right, and multiple ones of them.
Anyone want to react to that, or do we want to bring up some new points? I mean, to me, the definition does encompass that. I don't know what other people think about that, but to me, I think this would allow people to consider that type of person. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there'll be a narrative, so it could be explained. That point could be more explicitly raised as a narrative, and staff can keep keep track of that. Okay, sorry.
I thought it was a good job. I think it's a tough job, so and I'm always trying to get beyond. It's going to be exciting to go to measurement, but I did have a few comments here. I think clearly the definition complex. Is how you define complex is going to be very important, because I think there's some room there to know, because that basically requires a complex, that requires complex healthcare management. So I looked at a couple other things. I just want to make sure, and I'm not saying I agree or disagree with this, but influencing factor. So that to me implies that homelessness by itself is not considered a chronic condition. I just, it's an influencing factor, but it's clear, I think, from the definition we're saying that social determinants of health are not by themselves considered a chronic condition. The other thing that I wanted to just bring up is, one thing that I thought, whenever you use trained professionals, like you say, the development care from trained professionals that act together, I sometimes feel that sometimes exempts other caregivers or family members who might be a part of the healthcare team. So I personally prefer terms like from the members of the healthcare team, and then it leaves it a little broader as opposed to kind of at times saying that you have to be, you know, a certified physician or nurse or a social worker or whatever. So it's just another way to be, in my mind, a little more potentially inclusive. The last piece is, when it says after that, trained professionals that act together to significantly increase the complexity, I don't think the job of the team is to increase the complexity of management. I think it's to address complex, right? So that's something I noticed. Thanks.
Plus that ought to be who, not that.
Leon is next. I think it's a very good definition after a lot of discussion. It's very good. I have a couple of comments. One was the significantly increased, so thank you for bringing that up here. But there were two others. The in the slide that says assessment of quality of care measures targeting two or more concurrent chronic conditions. I think I need clarity on this. Are we saying that we recognize that if someone has heart failure and diabetes, to Cynthia's example, that there will be disease-specific measures for heart disease and diabetes, but that this framework is only addressing the cross-cutting issues? Because if we are, we may need to acknowledge that somewhere. Because right now it reads to me as if the only measures that are important are the cross-cutting ones. And surely, if you have the cross-cutting ones, like coordination of care, without the disease-specific ones, then we're missing something specific. We're missing something important. That's the first point I'd like clarity on. The second one is, in the same slide, I think that where it says important from an individual's perspective, this would, it's not clear to me what this refers to. Like, I'm not sure if it's part of the definition of chronic illnesses, as we described before, is and or, that's fine. But this seems to be referring to assessment of quality of care. And so I'm not sure what, I think it's a grammatical thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anybody reacting to that, to those? Okay, so I think Joseph is next.
I have a question more like from organizing the slides. So slide six, right, is the overall definition, right? And then one and two in the next slide is sort of a footnote, or how does it work?
Yeah.
And then you go to slide eight, right? And this is the continuation of the definition with the other three and four footnotes?
You know, it might be helpful if we go to tab two, because we have it how it would look like written in the report, because I know in slides it seems a little bit, perhaps a little, that might be helpful. So if we go to tab two, you see the, and I'll give you a moment to get there because I know you're popping it up electronically,
mm-hmm.
but we wanted to be careful to at least show you that some of these important distinctions are being incorporated, but we also were respectful that the definition was getting a little run on, so we felt this was the best approach, but that these would always accompany it. But if you see under tab two, you see the overarching condition, and footnotes one and two would always accompany that. And then here's where we start to dive in a little bit more around the measurement framework, this one of the specific applications of this, and where it gets played out a little bit more. And in the same manner, footnote three and four would accompany that.
Maybe I'm lost here, but in the final report, you're going to have everything in one slide or one
yes.
document,
mm-hmm.
and then the footnotes one, two, three, and four after
correct.
That. Did
correct.
I get it right?
Yes. And then we would play out some of these discussions, for example, the issue that Michael raised in the narrative.
I think Andrew's next.
I really like a lot of what's here. I mean, I think you guys have done an amazing job, particularly with the slide on the right. I could live with that being just about frozen. I have a couple of issues, questions, concerns about what's on the left. In a previous comment about whether homelessness is a health condition or not, the definition there, as I read it, if we would be that if it is a chronic homelessness condition and it was addressed through complex healthcare management or coordination, then it would be a health problem by this definition. And I don't know if there's a right or wrong here, but it would seem to me if the social problem of homelessness or the personal problem of homelessness is being addressed through complex healthcare management or coordination, as in the organization of homelessness services through a healthcare organization, it could very well qualify. So that might be bending what's meant here, but that might deserve some discussion as to whether that's met. Personally, I'm very comfortable that it's either requiring healthcare management or healthcare organization coordination of the care might be a way of getting at this. But I think it will depend a lot on local considerations of how a social problem, such as alcoholism, which can be treated outside of the healthcare system or inside the healthcare system, how it's going to play in that first sentence. And I don't know that there's a right answer. I just probably clarity becomes critical. I'm more concerned about the sentence beginning assessment of quality of care. Because right away, we're already back into care. Not all care is care. Some care is services. And to me, measures targeting people is a little bit inelegant. We probably shouldn't target people. And there is a range of measures. I still have lingering concerns about what is a measure that's very suitable for clinical practice and what is a very good measure for, as a measure of population health. Sometimes those are the same. Often they're not, and we don't have to decide which kind of measure we mean. There's a whole variety of measures. The other thing that sort of throws me is requiring ongoing clinical, behavioral, or developmental care. Again, that word care, and sometimes it's services, particularly around developmental. A lot of developmental care is provided in the school system, and school systems don't provide care. They provide educational services aimed at development. But the ongoing, to me, is problematic because at most it's probably episodic, or there is an episode of care that has a beginning and an end. Now, that may come up again and again and again of people. But when you use the word ongoing, I think it, particularly with private payers, tends up a whole bunch of maybe unnecessary red flags that ongoing means treatment for life. And I don't know that that's where you want to go with this. The episode has ongoing services, but there may be breaks among episodes. And then just a final comment. The phrase trained professionals is sometimes problematic in terms of how it gets interpreted in some regulatory context, because it's not clear whether trained was used because not all the relevant professionals were licensed or educated in that profession. And trained sometimes means that they were trained to do those things. So in a regulatory context, the word trained professional can sometimes be problematic, and people get into arguing as to whether I was
trained as a physical therapist to work with people with multiple chronic conditions, because I have no special certification or sub-certification in MCC. So it sometimes is a unnecessary distraction, but I can tell you that at least in one case it led to Medicare and a negotiated rulemaking over the word what meant to be trained in prosthetics and orthotics. So I'm very sensitive to that particular word.
Okay, thank you. I have to say, I think Q solved the issue about the trained professionals, and I think a lot of us are in agreement with that. I completely disagree about ongoing. I think it is ongoing. I think that's the whole point. Anyway, we'll see how people react to that. That's why those of us who deal with these types of patients all the time, at least on the provider side, have so much trouble with episodes, because it's ongoing. You can define an episode, but the care is actually ongoing across episodes, and it's very confusing as to how to look at that. But we only have 5 more minutes, so I want to get other people's reactions, and I'm sure there are people that come down different ways on that issue, or maybe it's semantics. Maybe we're saying the same things in a different way. Okay, so I think Jeffrey was next, and then Emma, and then Gail.
Well, I like the definition. I like what you put behind it. I especially like some of the clinical vignettes where you showed the medical versus the behavioral. I guess obviously for Medicaid, I'd like to see a little bit more mental health front and center, but I can live with behavioral. Just a couple comments I like the addition of targeting people with who are more, but I'm wondering if we could, are we targeting people or are we targeting access, quality, and cost? So, it might soften it a little bit, but that's your call on that. I really like, potential interactions. In Medicaid, we see that if you add homelessness with diabetes, schizophrenia, alcoholic, it just becomes multiplicative. It goes off the scale. Several of these people can be $250,000 a year, especially when you look at institutionalization in jail. The final thing was, I was just going to make one comment on the last part with, because you did such a nice job with behavioral and the second to last sentence there between conditions and treatment, kind of makes it a little bit more clinical. I'm wondering if you could add something like in the person's social context or with the clients or person's, sort of interaction, something like that. So it would read, not limited to potential interactions between conditions, comma, treatments, and the client, patients, whatever. Now we're using social context. Because you did such a nice job, it makes it a little bit less clinical here. I absolutely agree with you, and the problem is that, at least in Medicaid, the boundaries between education and healthcare, like with IEPs, individual education programs, I mean, we provide huge amounts of money in Medicaid for health care in the schools, like applied behavioral analysis, for God's sake. And then the other aspect of, I really like what you put together here. Those are only comments to soften.
Okay, Emma, then Gail.
I really like the top line definition that you came up with, but this is just a small comment on Q's identification of significantly increase. I actually think you meant that significantly increase as a modification to the chronic condition.
Yeah, that's another way to look at it. That's interesting. Okay, yeah, we can wordsmith that. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, could you say that one more time because she's typing? Yeah, I think I like that editorial comment here. Okay.
When you're talking about assessment of quality of care, it's not just a question of assessing the family caregiver's ability to assist in that care, that's certainly a component, but also the resources to support the family caregiver to be able to helped in that situation. So the idea is, it's not just asking, can you do this? But it's asking, if you can't, or what do you need to help, or if you can, what do you need to help you to do this? And somehow the idea of
the support to the family caregiver needs to be a part of the assessment of quality of care.
I'm sorry, I missed some of that. Where would you put that? I'm a little bit confused.
Well, it wouldn't just be in that last bullet, the way it's written there now. It's basically assessing the ability of the family to assist in that individual's care. That's fine. But in addition to that, perhaps we need to have something that sort of talks about support. So it's assessing, it's also supporting that family caregiver in providing the care.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I don't know if
it
would go in. I'm struggling where it goes or whether it's actually within the six IOM domains. I mean, that's the whole point of the measure. The measure is going to, you know, that's when a measure, when you have a measure that gets developed, that is one of the quality indicators that they might look at. So I'm not completely sure how it fits in. We can take that point.
Take it under consideration.
Yeah, let us take that back.
Thank you.
Okay. Barbara, I think you're the last one.
So we don't have the version we had before this one, but I was playing around with the definition, and it looks familiar. The words that I had trouble with, and I think we'll be talking about with the measurements, is significant and complex. I mean, I remember putting them in and expecting people to take issue. I don't know. I mean, you know, you have the statistical significant, and I thought, oh, my God, we'll go down that path, and we'll only have to have things that are evidence-based, and then, you know, what is complex. But it did strike me that we have to set the bar higher than we had it before, which was very descriptive in terms of having two conditions and having health problems, et cetera, et cetera. Somehow we have to make this not be everyone in the United States. And I think that's where the difficulty with this approach is, because I still don't have a very clear sense in my head how to make someone meet, how to separate the wheat from the chaff in this. And that's where I'm looking for the group to have more discussion about what rises to the surface of significant and complex beyond the vast majority of the elders, let's say, in this country. Anyway, it's more of an observation then.
Barbara, do you think that as we go through the rest of the day, some of that will become clearer? I mean, I'm sort of thinking of this as like, you know, like a law, like what is complex? You know, what does the mean, you know? So I'm not sure we can solve that in the definition. I wonder if we solve it further as we put a framework together.
Yeah, it's really meant to be a flag for what we have to think about, because this is what's, to me, both challenging and vague in the definition.
And the definition may actually need it to be so. I don't know. We'll keep that in our heads as we go further. Well, we're pretty much ready to sort of wrap up this, and I'd like to talk about some of the significant, what I think are the big issues that came up. Did you have one more?
I would like you to clarify the answer to my question, which is, are we on the left, when we say measuring measures targeting two or more, we're talking only about cross-cutting measures here?
No, we're not. And that's where we're trying to figure out how to word that so that we can encompass both things. So, which we talked a lot about on the call last week about how we have to deal with both disease measures and cross-cutting measures, and how you use disease-specific measures in patients that have multiple other diseases. So I think we're talking about both things. We're trying to wordsmith it, and if you're, maybe Karen can get with you.
Okay.
Because I think that's an important issue. The other important issues that I think have come up, I still am back on Cynthia's idea of decision-making, which I sort of like. I like making decision-making explicit. You know, I think that's one of the bigger issues that came up. Something I'm having trouble with is care versus services. And I think the muddle between, you know, it sort of brings in sort of the educational system and the social service system, and I don't know if our main stakeholders and our main audience are going to resonate with that or just turn off and say, well, I can't solve the educational system and the health system. So I don't know how to handle that one. I think that's something that we can get comments from. I personally would stick with care, but I don't know what everyone thinks about it. You know, the healthcare system can't solve the ills of society. So, you know, that's, So I'm struggling with that. I don't know if we want to think about that today or just, we do have more calls, and I think that's an issue that got brought up that's fairly substantive. I think the others are, a lot of the others are mainly wordsmithing. So anyway, anyone disagree with that? We can take about 3 more minutes and then we have to move on. And I, okay. Well, Christina was on first and then you.
I was just going to agree with Leonard that confusion exists, and one thought maybe could be to say rather than should consider measures, how about should include measures? Because I think when you say include, it suggests that there's other measures also there. Maybe that would help.
Well, I'm just wondering whether, again, care, with access, quality, and cost. I mean, the other thing I see missing in there is cost, and who can disagree with access, quality, and cost?
Although that is reflected in the 6 ILM names.
Right.
I mean, all the measures are going to, have to address some of the, at least
right.
some or all of those aims.
Right. But I'm just, you know, if we use care, then it sort of medicalizes it a bit versus access, quality, and care, then it looks at the three domains and the IOM also. It, again, I can live with this, but it's all wordsmithing. I think we're 90% there.
Yeah, I think we're 90% there too. Gail, did you have something else or? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and, the issue of significant and complex, I think we don't have to worry about that because the measure review committees will worry about that. For example, on the CD measures, somebody submitted a measure that on measuring liver function tests in patients on a particular drug, and we sent it back and said this was not important, and so the committees don't do that.
Okay, I think we have a lot to go on, although I agree that we're 90, if not 95% there. Staff will sort of reflect some of these issues, and I think that, again, the care versus service and the idea of cross-cutting versus individual diseases are tough, and how do we work that in. But thanks to everyone. I think the process is one more shot at this on a call, but we're very close, and I think you can feel pretty comfortable sort of, I don't know about releasing that, but talking about this definition, I think we're very close. So thanks to everyone for their input. Some great ideas. I mean, I didn't see any of this. I was okay. All right, so I can turn it over to Barbara now to do some of the interesting stuff.
Well, here we are, heading towards measurement, finally. The next section involves several slides, so let me just bring to your attention that we'll be going through slides 11 through 16 in detail. Our goal is to establish the principles for measurement approaches, so here is where we have an opportunity for some detail. And what I wanted to start with are just some overarching principles or overarching themes as we go through these slides so that you have a feel for what we've already taken on in our previous work. In slide number one, the theme is shared accountability across settings, providers, models, and the entire health system of the United States. A small scope. Slide number two, we move from shared accountability to multi-dimensional approaches to measurement. So there you have, Leona, not only cross-cutting measures, but condition-specific, behavioral, structural. And I want to bring to your attention an issue that Caroline and others have been dealing with, tied to a care plan. So think about that. In slide number three, we move from shared accountability to multidimensional to shared decision-making evidence in the measures. And here we're relating back to both patient and, as appropriate, family or caregiver's presence, again tied to a care plan. Number four, the theme looks at measures that have a priority by achieving a desired outcome, again based on shared accountability and shared decision making. Number five, over extended periods of time, acknowledging that changes occur over time and that the measures that may be appropriate will change over time. And six, we finally get to the preference of stratification over risk adjustment. So very, very broad themes with some commonality, starting from the system, providers, patients, and accountability, going to multidimensional, going to a focus on patient and, as appropriate, caregiver and family preference, prioritizing preferred outcomes, all the way to extended time limits with a preference for stratification. So I think it's just important to have a feeling that that's all included as we go through them. And so then let's begin with number one, and we'll look at comments on specific measures. And this one emphasizes shared accountability. And Karen, do you want to give us kind of an introduction to our goals?
Sure thing. And for those who would like to see this all on one page, we do have them all listed collectively under tab 3 if that's easier for you. So theme or guiding principle actually was illuminated on our last web meeting, because a question was raised, you know, who's accountable? Do we include the health plans? Do we include others? And so we thought that that might be a good lead off, that we wanted shared accountability across the system. And so that's where this originated from. I know from Thomas here, from the MAP and from the National Priorities Partnership, they're also putting forth this kind of, we're calling it a cascade from the individual level up through the system. So it's kind of this cascading notion, or this accountability at multiple levels of the system. So we tried to capture your voice from that, from the call, as best as we could.
Okay. Caroline.
One thing that confused me about this, I think I like the idea of shared accountability at multiple levels of care, although I don't quite know how you'd write a measure for that. But you also mean shared accountability between physicians. I mean, that's important, too. So it's not that clear exactly. So, because, I mean, measures can be at the levels of the individual provider, physician. They can be at the level of the health system. They can be between, you know. So I think you're getting at both concepts. It just wasn't completely clear.
Andrew?
Overall and system. What kind of system? It's just this overall system. And I think this is leaning, and it's okay to lean in that direction towards systems which deliver health or healthcare as their objective. But that just says overall system. It's just, I don't, you know, delivery system, healthcare system, because it goes back to the issue of where does it, when healthcare organization is providing social services and the tether to the healthcare organization gets loose or is really only economically on paper, but the delivery is through some other mechanism. And we need not get into that, but clarity there might be helpful, or ambiguity might be helpful, depending on which way you wanted to go with that.
Okay. Thank you. Q?
Yeah. I like this. I do like the idea of levels. I get concerned sometimes it promotes a sense of hierarchy, and often patients are at the bottom of the hierarchy. But I do like it in terms of, like, individual patient provider, and then I usually think system as a as a broader level. I would be remiss to not refer to the fact that stakeholders is another term that I like. And I noticed that certain stakeholders are not necessarily on this list. Like purchasers, in the U.S. we have a very much an employer-based healthcare system where employers like IBM are spending almost $2 billion a year for 100 some odd thousand employees. So, I think that's an important stakeholder to include. Government is not in here specifically as well, and whether or not they're another stakeholder that needs to also be a part of the accountable structure.
Thank you. Just
I might be confused with this performance measure. Can you give me an example what the performance measurement of should be shared and promoted? Because with all these levels and lateral and upward, I need an example.
So I'll give an example that we actually played out. It was around tobacco. So certainly tobacco cessation, certainly at the individual provider level. There could be counseling and pharmacotherapy and evidence-based interventions at the individual level. You know, if you went to a state level, there might be other policy drivers such that we know have been effective, like regulation. You know, if you rolled up at a population level, you might be assessing within a certain region or a community the number of non-smokers you have. So you could have a measure that drives towards smoking, a smoke-free population, but at each level you would have metrics that would build and address to that. You know, maybe in an ideal world that'd be a perfectly harmonized measure that had this wonderful numerator denominator that could roll up or roll down. We're not there yet, but it's more around looking at each level of accountability and what would be the measure of the most effective evidence-based intervention at each level of accountability. Tobacco was one example.
So are you asking if performance measurement should occur, period, or performance measurement when it does occur for people with multiple chronic conditions? Is that what your question is there?
Yes, all aspects. First of all, I need to know, so tobacco is one problem or is already multiple problems? And then are you evaluating each problem separately or are you looking into the context of multiple chronic? So that's the reason I'm a little confused. Sure. What are we measuring?
Right. I think this is a good question. You know, this guiding principle here, I think more holistically says that we're not going to get to high quality health care for individuals with multiple chronic conditions unless everybody's engaged. I think that's what this principle more broadly has to say. I think when we try to play this out from a performance measurement perspective, it gets very complicated. And we don't have the solutions yet. But it's when you're thinking about an individual that they're, you know, you're seeing them as an individual provider, you may be assessed in certain ways, but we would want to look at where appropriate, what are the other levels within the system that would drive us towards getting a good health outcome. So I think this is a more overarching type of principle that we feel that there should be accountability at multiple levels. As we think of performance measurement moving forward, we might want to think about that continuity. As we set national priorities and goals, and as Tom on the map makes measure sets towards that, you would want the goal at the top to sync up and how that might play out. But the performance measurement piece, I agree, is very complicated because we haven't thought that way. We've always thought more in silos.
Okay. Daniel?
Yes, just following the same theme of questions, I know at the onset we talked about the fact that our job is to define broader goals and not really get too caught up in the details of implementation. But there's such a discrepancy between what we're talking about and the clinical realities. In my head, as I hear this, I keep thinking of an elderly woman with chest pain that has all kinds of psychosocial issues and thinking, you know, how do we apply this? This notion of shared accountability, I keep thinking of an attorney looking at this and thinking of what he or she's going to do with this. And I think of how far the current hospital structure is and the hospitalist and all these layers of complexity of caregiving, how are they going to approach this? And so should we just stay on this very lofty theme, which is very exciting. I feel like I'm at a candy shop. This is so exciting. And at the same time, it's so far away from the clinical reality that I know.
Okay. I appreciate that. Barbara?
Sort of into the, is care accountability the only thing we're promoting? I mean, I don't know. Somehow that seems like the end way of measuring it. But what we're trying to do is, you mentioned the word dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
I think one proximate thing would be with the promoting collaborative care with shared something that is a woman's job. And that I agree, the current healthcare system is very tough about how I can share with a person with another whole healthcare system, et cetera. But ideally, we are setting up a framework where we should be able to say, you're now my partner in my case, say, as a general internist and as a cardiologist, and together we should somehow be working collaboratively to improve that care. So I wanted to take in or think about collaborative care. And I agree with this huge idea of
other stakeholders, and you can give an EG there, the government, and mm-hmm. frankly, they're responsible. So I don't think we'll get off of a big shirt. You know, those guys, they need to be part of the accountability practice.
Christina?
So my comments actually are very similar to Barbara. I have the same challenge with the word shared accountability, which I think sometimes also feels like a punitive. And I thought maybe it's what we're really trying to get at, I thought of the word care coordination, which I think is similar to what you were saying, Barbara, something around should promote care coordination to optimize patient outcomes. But there's something that feels, I don't know, awkward about the shared accountability and how you actually measure that. But if it's about care coordination, I think people can start thinking about what those measures might be more easily, perhaps.
Caroline?
Yeah, I think we're all picking up on the same theme. I'm wondering if this actually is two statements, because there is this one sort of global, which I think your smoking example really is almost a public health aspect, where activities at various levels of the healthcare system and various stakeholders are all sort of promoting the same quality measure, the same health improvement intervention as smoking. Nutrition might go in there, obesity could go in there, some sort of public health quality things. But then there is the clinical reality that those of us who are physicians are really dealing with. And this shared accountability care coordination where the hospitalist, the primary care doctor, the cardiologist all have to work together, and the home care nurse all have to work together so that so the patient's not readmitted. So you sort of think, how do you deal with that coordination, you know, at the provider level? So I'm wondering if we should sort of separate it into two, because I do think the shared accountability, collaboration, or coordination among providers is huge. And in the short term, that's what's going to achieve, go closer to the AAA and a lot of other things if providers work together. So it seems to me that might be something, this might be 1A and 1B, or it just might be two topics.
Margaret?
Oh, sorry. The piece that's problematic for me is holding the patient as one of the accountable stakeholders. Mm-hmm. And while that, again, is an idealism, still, patients are more passive in this relationship, and I don't see patients believing that they're accountable for their health care outcomes. I think they look to the other stakeholders, the health care system, the insurance provider, the physician, and others.
Oh, well, there we go. Okay. That's it. We'll have about four more, and we'll need to move on. Joseph?
Now, when you brought this example, it's a little clear to me what you're trying to achieve. So it's a very tall order, and I think we should all aspire for this, but it seems not very practical in the real world, is what I hear. So I think if we do everything right in the next measurements, I think this will be achieved by one or the other. So why not stating that we are trying to achieve it rather than trying developing performance measurement for something that seems to me very difficult to do? We can be stuck on this for a whole meeting. So I would park it and go to the next. And I think if we are able to develop measurement for the others, it will lead to a performance accountability and so forth.
Thank you. Gail?
I'm thinking along the lines of having to, or this being focused on attempting to have the patient have more accountability. Maybe the patients are passive now, but they have to become more engaged in what's happening to them and the individual care plan, and that just like the docs don't all talk to each other now, that's what we're laying out as a goal. We all should be laying out as a goal that the patient has some accountability as well.
So I'm hearing we may just make a statement of understanding where we are and where we want to be and introduce that. Thomas.
Yeah, just if you look at Ostrom's work on common pool resources, accountability is in there. If everybody has to be accountable within their ability to be accountable, and including the patient, and so that people can't just walk away from, including insurers, walk away from the problem and say, sorry, I choose not to.
Thank you. Thomas?
or Jeffrey, sorry.
No, that's right. I like this, and I really think it should stay. Let me give you another example. I mean, many of our chronic care patients don't take their medication, and then they end up in the hospital. Some of the accountability is the employer has set too much copayments, and we're looking at Medicaid, too, and so that's an accountable. They don't take their meds, so, you know, and the providers ought to know, so how are they accountable, and basically how are we training them in motivational interviewing? And I think, you know, from if you look at the cost side, on the rehospitalization, which is the big cost in this, having the system and the client accountable, I think is, I really like this. I hope it stays.
Thank you. I think with that, we'll move on to the second principle. And here we have multiple issues in front of us. A measurement strategy that is, and here we have cross-cutting, condition-specific, et cetera, and tailored to a patient's care plan. Comments? Caroline.
Well, this plan, this care plan. So, no, I don't mean to have a vendetta against care plan, but as those of you who are on the call, I have some trouble with that language because this really has to, I don't think it's that language that doctors think about. We talk about management plan or management strategy or something like that. And as I say, when I hear care plan, it means something from the home nurse that I've never read. I just sign because I have to. So I just wonder if that's, I would call it management strategy or, you know, something like that, so that the doctors don't just turn off because they have to be part of the care team. Care plan comes through often, and, you know, it's mentioned many times, and if the group can come up with a better way of looking at that, you know, I think that might be helpful because really, we really want the physicians to be one of the audiences that care about this instead of saying it just belongs to nursing and social work or it doesn't belong to me. So, and I could be wrong. This is just how I'm interpreting it whenever I see it. But it doesn't mean that there shouldn't be a management plan that's discussed and vetted between the patient and the care team and the family and the doctor. But, you know, how we call, what will we use as terminology is important. Words are important. Words communicate. So I'm interested in other people's opinion about this, and that was just my opinion.
Thank you. And I'll just note, we've talked about that, and perhaps one of the things that in some ways makes it the easiest to put off is to use the words care plan because we all have an idea of what that means, and there were several smiles around here that the same reaction. Q?
My comment's relatively quick. This is where I think what this committee offers is potentially very important in terms of emphasizing the cross-cutting. Because we have the disease-specific, condition-specific stuff, and we don't want that just to be reduxed into this new stuff. So this is where I might have placed in here the measurement strategy should incorporate measures that are cross-cutting. But I don't know, just some. I might emphasize that, elevate that in this section or somehow.
Thank you. Christina?
Can you just provide clarity what you mean by structural? My understanding, but perhaps other people would want to speak to it, is that it's like having the actual processes in place. Like, so do you actually have a registry of all your patients on warfarin? Do you provide services that might support caregivers? So it sort of is at a level beyond the individual.
Organizational.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara?
I'm kind of resonating with the comments about tailored to a patient's care plan. I have to tell you, I think that adds a lot of specificity that I'd rather not see. Tailored to me, I don't know, I got nailed in grant reviews by using that word without making it specific enough to individual patients, and that really isn't what we're going for. So I would actually say a management strategy may incorporate and get rid of all the stuff in between. And I was also resonating with a comment about the condition specific, because to me that gets it sends the wrong message for this. I think cross-cutting to me would be that if you have diabetes and a bunch of other things, then your condition specific one would not be the same as it is if you didn't have all these other things. So the cross-cutting kind of captures to me the dimension that's unique here. So I was not a fan of condition specific either.
I can tell you in the feedback on that, it's been how do you systematize so that you don't totally step away from evidence-based. But I hear what you're saying, and later on we'll talk about how that is based on preferences and what's appropriate. Margaret.
The phrase appropriateness of care is problematic because it's. I wonder if we want to replace that with something more like evidence-based. I'm not sure how one would determine for a population that the care is appropriate without turning to an evidence.
I hear what you're saying. Daniel?
I just, again, want to acknowledge what I think is the inherent complexity on so many levels, because just like the comment, Helen, that you made about the caregiving plan, and, you know, how the culture of a nursing division may be different than the culture of the physician. So even there, you have a disconnect of language. The complexity of having buy-in from patients. The pills, the nomenclature of pills is a catastrophe, in my opinion. The sizes of pills, the numbers of pills, everyone, the notion that a specialist is going to be challenged by somebody who, because the word specialist implies a judgment. I think that the word partialist that was brought up here was wonderful. What a paradigm shift. But I think we need to start, you know, acknowledging, and I guess it's a daunting task, but how do you structure medicine that's more conducive to these goals? And I think that really is the ultimate challenge.
Robert?
So I guess I'm in agreement about this piece about the patient's care plan, because when I first read this, I thought, whose care plan? So the reality is, I think that you could just take out that phrasing and just say which incorporates cross-cut. I mean, that's probably easy to work with.
Thomas?
Yeah, I think everybody will have something to hate in this thing. but I think it's actually pretty good. I think patient's care plan is in there because of the P and STEEP. We use, frankly, in our medical group, we use care plan, and it's a tab in our Epic. And then appropriateness of care. I think one of the reasons this committee is here is that evidence-based care is not always the most appropriate. Isn't that what we were talking about? That sometimes you got to bail. And so, but I don't think we're going to be able to do much better than this, because I got criticized the other day for talking about managing patients. We're everybody hates. Somebody will hate any word you choose.
Any final comments? Yes, ma'am.
Can you speak very briefly to the care plan? I understand your reticence about it, but just to know that that CMS and ONC are using this terminology. And just to sort of eventually, hopefully, everybody says the same thing, by the way. Everybody hates the term. But the plan of care or care plan is coming up, and I think would be very good if whatever term gets used for this is used across the measurement as well as carrying these things out. That's just a comment.
So why are they picking care plan?
Mm-hmm. Because you haven't come up with a better one yet. I think if you guys came up with something better, I think people would adopt it. I think that there was just an interest in finally coming up with common terms across all the different areas. And I think it's for want of something better. So I think if something better, better term came up, I think people would be receptive of it. But just, you know, I just caution everybody to use the same term rather than saying that this is the best term.
I'm certainly willing to be wrong on this. I think someone made an interesting point. If this is Epic speak, I don't know who does Epic. If Epic uses that terminology, care plan, I don't know. U of M is just switching to Epic right now. We won't have it for another 6 months. So maybe care plan is what is going to be coming to the fore. And again, words are important. My major fear with everything that we do is something that Daniel brought up, is that it's not going to resonate with the doctors, and you really have to bring them in. You don't want them to shut off and say, say, well, this is touchy-feely and, you know, whatever, get the social worker. So, so that's my only issue. But I could be wrong.
Cynthia?
So my comment relates to this idea of care plan, but actually sort of leads on to touching on to some of the other guiding principles. But I feel like there's, when we talk about prioritization or tailoring, that I feel like we sometimes mean like several different things, and I wonder if that's part of why some of us are struggling with care plan or whatever word we would use instead in here. So it strikes me that it's important to prioritize within a person, and in an ideal world we would be able to measure performance, that we were measuring performance somehow in line with the patient's goals, but that fundamentally that prioritization has occurred at an individual level. I mean, my understanding is that's a fairly big shift from the way we currently are measuring performance, and I certainly agree that that is something that's worth figuring out how to get to. But I think that there's another level of prioritization, which sometimes we're referring to and isn't inherent in this one, which is like prioritizing at a population level. Like, would we be able to figure out which measures might apply in general to people with multiple chronic conditions? So inherent in that would be, I think, is the idea is, are there measures that might apply to everyone with MCCs? So if this is not necessarily a good example, but if everybody agreed that medication reconciliation should happen at least once per year on everyone with MCCs, and I'm not saying that people would agree on that, but that's something that might apply no matter what your specific conditions were. And then I think there's another part is where do we actually have measures and where do we actually need measures, and I don't think that's coming up in these guiding principles. But my struggle with care plan here was that I wasn't sure if we were really trying to say that measurements had to be guided by knowing what the individual's priorities were, and that was, and I think that's very, very valuable. I'm just not sure we want to take off the table the idea that perhaps there's things that before we figure out exactly how to do that, are there ways to measure performance in people with MCCs at a population level that apply to everyone, or at a population level that will apply to a subset of people who meet that definition, you know, who are just in the hospital or who have a specific combination of conditions.
That moves well into number three. I see people have several tens up. Critical comments on number two? Yeah.
Barbara, mind? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, because Cynthia, you really
do that
thread. Because I guess because we know what's coming, since we did the drafters. But I want to be really respectful, because Cynthia, you just triggered something for me, and it's almost as teasing out, because I think what I'm hearing from the group, we're very comfortable that, you know, certainly we want to take a multidimensional approach to measurement for individuals with MCCs, and that, you know, certainly we're emphasizing the cross-cutting and the other areas, which will be further when we go to the conceptual model for that outer ring, which will be played out. So I think the thing here is that, you know, it's not a one-size-fit-all. As we get to our conceptual model, you'll see that it's very complex and multidimensional, and that these important elements around the cross-cutting, you had brought up some structural things around team-based care, you know, and I think that was something that came out on the webinar, Cynthia, that I really, when I was writing this one, I glommed onto when you said, you know, I think we're trying to get at this multidimensional approach. I think the care plan and the concordance with patients' preferences and goals is maybe mucking this up a bit. Maybe the core concept for this goal is multidimensional approach to measurement, and then when we get to the next one, where it speaks very specifically to shared decision-making, concordance with goals, and then the following speaks to prioritization. It might be that we, as staff, humbly trying to capture all this good stuff, we put too much in one. It might be a way for us to kind of really hone in on what we mean on each one of these principles.
Can I answer what you just said? That's what I was trying to make a point about before, about just removing the, I don't think care planning is bad, to use the language, but I don't think the measurement is wrapped around the care planning, because there might be measures that go beyond that.
Yeah.
I actually am taking one more chair priority on this one because the owner was not in the room to say it. I think we have to leave condition specific in there. I really think that there's that tension there, and that has to stay in there because one of the things that this committee has got to come out with is how we modify condition specific measures for MCC, or we will have really missed a major opportunity. So my preference, and again, this may be coming up because a lot of different points are coming up on the other slide. So we want to move on. But my issue is that tension between the condition specific and cross-cutting is critical, and I think we have to preserve it.
So the only risk you play there in saying that is that you will be adopting the condition specific one without any modification.
Yeah.
I don't think it says
that. No, we've got
more things.
Okay.
That
I think
we'll
modify.
I'm going to agree with that because I just want to, the condition specific is important because let's give the example of a depressed, homeless person with hypercholesterolemia. The reality is our measures have been focused and exempted people who have comorbid conditions. And we need to, so I think it's important to keep it in there, but I do think it's important to assure that there's a cross-cutting as well. My point isn't get rid of one, but make sure that when you re-look at it, you're adding cross-cutting as well.
Okay, respectfully, we're going to go to number 3, and hopefully we will address that. This focus is, pointing to jointly developed through shared decision-making process in a care plan based on patients' preferences. Joseph, why don't you take it?
What about parents of children or family members if it's a family thing?
Or as appropriate, the family or caregiver's preferences. Good. We've got it. Andrew.
I think I'm getting confused because of the way we are flipping in and out of whether we're talking at the level of the individual or the level of a population. And I think that was some of the problem on the second slide because populations don't have care plans. And here it seems we first talk about people with, that sounds population-y to me, but then it says with a patient's preferences. And you can do both. I can measure whether in general I'm assessing patient preferences, or I can do it very specifically. Did I do it in that patient? And similarly with appropriateness of care, the salient characteristics about a particular individual may in fact make me appropriately not do what is generally done for people in that category. And I think that's some of the struggle here. So clarity, that these may proceed in divergent ways and sometimes in concordant ways, and what we mean here I think is really, really critical. Otherwise we're going to get population-based measures applied at the level of the individual, and almost always that will give you unintended consequences of incredible proportion. And then that's where practitioners of all sorts feel the burden, like, yeah, in general I do that with people with COPD and this, that, and the other thing, but not with, you know, Mrs. McGillicuddy here, because blah, 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 blah. And everybody goes, you know, you're absolutely right. You treated her perfectly, even though you went against common wisdom. How are we going to deal with that?
And I would ask, as I think this becomes also more of like a whole, number 4 goes down to relevant to achieve desired outcomes for an individual. So I hear what you say, but maybe we need to have it more succinctly. Leona.
While I agree with 3, I think that it may often, in my experience, end up in conflict with 2. I think that I'll give you just a concrete example. So we see lots of children with diabetes. We know that the appropriate care is a certain kind called a basal bolus kind of insulin regimen, et cetera. But we know that there are families where the family refuses to do it. We know the child's care will be compromised, but the family refuses to do it for various reasons, you know. I think that there will be this tension between number 2 and number 3 that we're going to have to figure out, but I see it as a real life issue.
Thank you. Jeff?
I just had a question for you on the shared decision-making. Are you thinking of shared decision-making as sort of a individual client-patient discussion, or the shared decision-making that MQF will be responsible for with the evidence-based or certified decision-making? I'll give you an example. Shared decision-making can be the patient only wants brand name drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or the other one where this comes in all the time is in harm reduction versus abstinence, especially in substance abuse, where you've got one set of people that will say, well, a little bit of drinking or a little bit of heroin, but if I can get them off methamphetamine is all right, versus the NA, which is abstinence. So I just wanted clarity. Is it both or is it one or the other?
So I can share from the perspective, as this has evolved with the National Priorities Partnership work around shared decision-making. So we looked to the work at Dartmouth with Jim Weinstein and the Foundation for Informed Medical Decision-Making, which has certainly it's a collaborative process between the provider and the patient, but where the patient is presented with the evidence-based approaches. I'll give an example, for example, around prostate cancer or breast cancer is a traditional one that is used, or whether there are other modules that have been played out. Certainly there are ones that need to be. So this would be, having that evidence-based discussion, and then based on your preferences, whether you would choose lumpectomy versus mastectomy would be based on that. So it was based on a more formalized type of sharing between the two that brought in the evidence-based and the options.
So do we want to say then evidence-based shared decision-making? Because I think then it gets confusing, because I could go the other way and say the client only wants brand name drugs, and that's a shared decision.
Yeah, that's an important. Thank you.
Q.
I agree with the practicality of these issues can potentially conflict, but that doesn't necessarily mean you shouldn't measure them both. So in terms of how a provider kind of team might want it and how a patient's team might, the family might want it. The language here is a little hard for me to, I feel like there's an issue there. If the care plan is jointly, and assumes it's jointly developed through shared decision-making process, right? Because it's assuming that. So does that mean that, I think what you meant is you want to make sure that the process, you're measuring that the process is shared decision-making, and then you want to measure if the outcome, the actual plan is concordant with the patient's preferences.
Mm-hmm.
So by the way it's languaged here, this only means that those plans that have been developed with shared decision-making, then you see if they're executed in concordance. So I'm just...
That's an important distinction, Q, because this was raised because you want to make sure that the process occurred, but you don't want it to just be check the box, because the only way the process can occur, but concordance with preferences may not follow. So I think this is and I think we could step out the language that way, that first this type of process occurred in a a joint way, and that the outcome of that was actually executed. So we can thank you.
More, I think the next one addresses it more in prioritization.
Michael?
Yes, I think that number three is clear in saying that the treatment plan should be something that is jointly contributed to by the people involved. But what made number two, and maybe some of the others, get confusing is that the treatment plan, really what we're talking about is the treatment plan for managing somebody with multiple chronic diseases, not the specific one disease, because the treatment plan of the cardiologist and the treatment plan of the nephrologist and the treatment plan of the psychiatrist may not be the treatment plan of managing the patient with multiple chronic diseases. And I think that's where it gets confused. But number three, it is very clear, because at least at some level, all of these people that are contributing to the management of the patient should have some communication so that they're not running separately and that we then have four or five different treatment plans going on, interfering with each other. But I think number three makes it clear, and I think that's what should be looked at the other ones to be that kind of clarity.
Thank you. Christina?
So along the same theme somewhat, so
I thought it was curious, and having perhaps this is on the call that I was not on, that so the primary focus of performance measurement is around that, and I was just curious more around the background of that. And then I would also, I mean, shared decision-making, to me that's a much bigger issue than just because you have an MCC. So I was also intrigued that this was here, and has this been brought up in other performance measurement? Because this to me seems like a much broader issue than just because they have an MCC. I was just curious around that.
So this has been raised outside the context of multiple chronic conditions, but I think at least what we were trying to capture from the call is that the I'll look at this from maybe even from a payment perspective, if I may, because this is where it plays out. So if you want a shared decision-making process to occur, you want things to be in concordance with individuals' preferences. If individual's preference was not to have strict hemoglobin A1C control, but rather to, you know, have a certain quality of life issue, then as a provider, you know, controlling it at 9 versus 7 would be okay because that was in concordance with preferences and the trade-offs that were decided between the patient and the provider. So there was this kind of this primary thing that the goals, that the patient goals would drive assessment. And this is tricky. Mm-hmm. It's really tricky, but there was, so if we may, maybe the primary focus is too strong, but we were hearing strongly that the patient's preferences and their goals that were developed collectively with the provider were very important to this assessment.
Cynthia?
So, you know, when I read this one, I felt, and this relates to my prior comment, like I feel like this is, in some ways, calling for two very specific measures that would potentially apply at the population level to everyone with MCCs, so or at a subset of a population of people with MCCs. So, did shared decision making occur, and then is the care plan executed according to that? But I feel like what you just said, and what is on the fourth one, which is I think, you know, very innovative and important, is sort of the idea that what we actually want to move towards is that which other measures apply to a person with MCCs is determined by what their priorities are. And I wonder if, you know, in some way sort of making that clear, and I think that in fairness to the way the measurement world is right now, that we'd have to sort of acknowledge which things are sort of doable immediately and which ones are harder, given what we know, is making that clear would be helpful. And, I mean, I at some level, but perhaps I'm interpreting wrong what you mean by a primary focus of performance measurement, to me that is sort of making a, that is to me sort of making a population level prioritization that, which I don't disagree with, but I just, in terms of thinking about it clearly, that saying that doing this, that we think this is actually one of the highest priorities at a population level for people with MCCs, which I think may be something that this committee wants to do or wants to say, but I feel like that's what's sort of implicit in that primary focus. But maybe thinking about that as sort of the individual level guiding the way we measure, individual level priorities, guiding which denominator someone ends up with, is somewhat different than the population level. And so maybe saying, and I don't think they're necessarily mutually exclusive.
Sure.
But maybe I don't think the they're the same thing.
From what I'm hearing from the group, maybe the flow of this should be the first, even though when we were doing this, the flow is around the prioritization piece that on the patient, and then that the subsequent things occur.
Okay.
So even though we have it out of order now, it seems like what I'm hearing now is that first we have the prioritization that the patient is involved with, then we, you know, the other two-step process that Q kind of teased out. Is that what you're, yeah.
And
you have to wordsmith it first, but yeah.
Yeah, I think as I've listened to the discussion, I've become even more concerned, because what this slide is saying, and I'm not saying I disagree with it, it says perhaps that it will be developed through a shared decision-making process. That sounds like a good thing. But the second thing is, and it will be executed in a concordance with patient preferences. And that also can sound like a good thing, but we've heard reason not. And there are some decisions which are not best. Patients often say, you decide, you're the expert, tell me what's best. How do we deal with that? That doesn't mean we don't attempt to engage.
Mm-hmm.
So the performance measure seems to be a measure of the attempt to engage to the degree that the patient wanted to engage or was ready to engage. And it is, you judge an individual practitioner on concordance with patient preferences as such preferences were possible or advisable. And Karen, I think it's interesting that you mentioned the rigid control of hemoglobin A1C when there is ample evidence from VA for sure that in some patients rigid control down to 7 is not a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact,
mm-hmm.
it's mm-hmm. so, but again, at the level of measuring whether a person as a practitioner is a good practitioner versus whether we are doing a good job with people with multiple chronic conditions seems to me to have to be pulled apart, particularly when the population measures get back down to, were you a good doc or practitioner with this patient? Because there are huge sampling issues that we haven't gotten to. When how much of a sample do you have to take from me before you can begin to approximate a correct answer? So I think we've got to be careful because this builds in a, I hate to call it a political, this is what you must meet. You must have shared decision making and you must be in concordance with patient preferences. And that's not a measurement decision, that's a value decision. And it's a good value decision, but it's still a value decision, not a how you will measure concordance or discordance or degree of agreement with the value.
Christine, Barbara?
Yeah. I don't like it. And so other than that, no. First of all, the primary focus really strikes me as somebody out there who's a zealot. Because there's a lot of other important things. And I don't know. And then the other is this issue of use of the hemoglobin A1C of 9. There's a lot of health disparities literature out there that suggests docs don't try. So, you know, the patient says, well, my hemoglobin's 9, but I'm really more interested in my broken ankle, which is probably reasonable, but then it doesn't come back. You say, well, okay, that's what they want. So I think that you have to go back to sort of motivational interviewing, which is elicit, find out what people want, provide, you've got to give them information, and then elicit where they are after you've given them the information, rather than sort of elicit, okay. And shared decision making is definitely part of it, but the preferences part is where it's not so clear. And you don't want people short-circuiting the system by saying, well, that's what they wanted. And it does remind me, though, of my favorite cartoon, which is a doctor standing with a table with an egg on it, and the egg has cracks all over it, and the doctor says, you know, the crack can be fixed. It's your cholesterol level that worries me. It's true that we have to have the patient engaged and understand, but, you know, so that, again, I don't see how this fits in without also talking about priorities. So I doesn't.
Right, which is, we'll talk about that in 2 seconds. Q and then Margaret.
So if the definition is the kind of elevator speech, the big picture, and then I view these principles as the priorities. And so with a little, I agree with, I don't think this element, this one is needed. I mean, I like this as a priority, but it's in the quality aims. It's patient-centeredness, basically. This is sort of like, why didn't we put safe? Why didn't we put timely? Why didn't, I mean, if I'm thinking broadly and just contextualizing these 6 slides now, the 6 priorities that we've sort of identified as the principles, and it relates to chronic conditions, I'm intrigued with coordination is a big piece. I think, you know, where that is, clearly we've talked about that. I would say cross-cutting measures is a big piece. I think that's in item 2. I actually think affordability. I mean, we haven't, the reason why we're in this kind of financial crisis in some levels is because chronic conditions are very expensive. And it's interesting that we haven't necessarily elevated. I know it's inefficient. I know it's in quality. But if this is the opportunity for you to elevate something that you think is relevant, particularly with this topic, and perhaps emphasize it. So I wouldn't necessarily emphasize are people with multiple chronic conditions more likely to not have patient centeredness than people, you know, we've got a problem with that in the healthcare system in general. I don't know. I think we've got challenges of integration and coordination. I would emphasize that, but not necessarily patient centeredness.
So, Hugh, are you recommending that there be a separate principle that addresses efficiency or affordability?
I mean, in some ways, you could argue that the accountability one sort of implies that. I mean, I would have liked that slide, the shared accountability. I would have said shared communication and coordination at all levels or with all stakeholders. I mean, it sounds, what I get concerned about is that so far from the way the system is, you know, but that's what principles are for, what you want the system to be, I guess, and what you're prioritizing. But I do feel, I mean, maybe under the measures, slide two, where you talked about cross-cutting, there's no mention of affordability, I mean, cost. And it is sort of like related. I feel like if access, quality, cost, I mean, we've been talking, that's what our healthcare system is supposed to address. Frankly, we're not putting cost very explicitly in any of these principles, and I do think it's worthy of being emphasized.
Thank you. Margaret.
I want to come back to the concepts of shared decision-making and concordance with patient preferences. And if we think about those at a population level and we think about them broadly, a broad understanding of shared decision-making includes the patient's choice to let the physician decide. That's still a shared decision. And likewise, concordance with the patient's preferences, the patient preference might be you decide. You tell me what meds to take and when to take them and how to take them, and I'm going to comply. So I think the concepts are still useful at a population level and as a goal for multiple chronic conditions if we use that broader understanding of what patients' shared decision-making is.
Okay. We're going to move on to number four, and I can tell already this is going to be exciting. And number four, performance measurement for persons with MCC should allow for prioritization of which measures are most relevant to achieving desired outcomes as determined by the care plan. I cannot believe this amount of hesitation before someone. Margaret.
You need to insert the word patient. And, you know, achieving patient desired outcomes. That's whose outcomes we're interested in. Otherwise, it's whose outcomes? Is it the health insurer's outcomes? Is it the hospital system's outcomes? Whose outcomes are we interested in?
Jeffrey?
Well, I like this. A couple comments on the prioritization. A little unclear about what that means. Is that prioritization based on your level of risk, each risk, the multiplicative of risk? You know, one of the things that I think this committee could really help as we develop measures is one thing that we're working on is looking at how do you, as a case manager, as a doctor, where do you start first?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we're starting to use prospective models to actually feedback to providers and case managers to say, okay, if you're either looking at this patient, here's where you might want to start because this is the thing that predicts their highest risk. Or if you're looking at a cohort of patients, Here's where I would probably start because this is the driver of risk in this cohort, this patient here. So I'm a little bit unclear what prioritization means, but I like it quite a bit, putting performance measures on this.
Jeffrey, define risk. Health risk? Cost risk?
It's back to my access, quality, and cost. I mean,
okay.
if we're improving access, quality, and cost, I think we're improving the client's health. And there's the dichotomy. You know, how do you improve the health of the insurance plan, and how do you improve the health of the client? Well, access, quality, and cost. You know, if you've got all three and you're doing it, you know, a third, a third, and a third, I mean, who could argue with that? But then when you start saying care and patient preference, then you get into that, I want brand only, and then the insurance plan wants generic only. So I like, again, I sound like a broken record. I apologize, but, you know, access, quality, and cost to me is good care. And it's good care for the insurance company, it's good care for the state, and it's good care for the client.
Caroline?
I was just wondering if maybe 3 and 4 and somehow, you know, we had a lot of trouble with 3. If 3 and 4 are sort of related, maybe that should they should be combined in some way. So, you know, again, this is wordsmithing, but how do you prioritize except based on, you know, evidence and patient preferences and, you know, informed patient preferences? So I'm just wondering if that's one way to handle some of the problems we had with 3, is it somewhat encompassed within 4? And then I like the idea of figuring out how to deal with efficiency and, you know, maybe that should be, we should reserve one of the separate, you know, statements or one of the separate domains for efficiency. I'm not sure what to do about access. We haven't talked about that much, so I guess I'll just leave that to others to discuss that.
Q?
Yeah. This prioritization, I know, is a big part of our conversations, the need to prioritize. I agree with what just was said, that generally based on evidence and patient preferences, that's basically how your priorities come out. But once again, kind of looking at the broader forest, I'm trying to think, as it relates to people with multiple chronic conditions, is this an important thing to really emphasize more so? I'm not as kind of clear on that, you know, as it relates to other topics that we've talked about. So.
Leona?
I'm having some trouble with this, partly because I think this determined by the care plan is, to me, a little ambiguous. But I also feel that this idea of this the patient decision-making process in pediatrics, there's this developmental trajectory, and at some point it's only the parents, and at some point it ultimately becomes the child who begins to be important in the, you know, in the decision-making. But what we see a lot of are families that are dysfunctional, that are, you know, that are poor and dysfunctional and broken, and it ends up that if we incorporate the parent's preference primarily, the child will get worse medical care because they are sort of unable to coordinate their own care, basically. You know, and so I'm worried about defaulting and sort of increasing disparities and increasing these problems by defaulting to saying that it was the family's preference that the child not receive something that we actually know would be better for the child. And that's what I think could happen, and I don't see how to build that in right now.
Barbara?
So that's the thing. I'm worried about the priorities being based on patient preferences, and yet I'm worried about how are we going to decide empirically where the priorities should be from a population point of view. I really feel like with complex patients, priorities are crucial for us to address. And I think we have to have something in here about either that being a goal of the measurement research world, or but I'm not all for making the patient be the dominant decider about priority. I'm tired of patients who have other things who come in with a headache and say they want an MRI. That may be your priority, folks, but that isn't the way we really want to have care determined. So I know there are patient advocates out there, and I feel very strongly they have to be engaged, but there is a whole world of evidence that we need to be applying, and somehow that has to be brought into the prioritization process.
Joseph?
I agree with all of the above, and that's the reason in number 3, I think it should stay preference, and in the prioritization, it probably is the medical team has to have a very clear priority, and if I also agree with your comment that 3 and 4 can be combined. One is preference. Yes, I would like to have an MRI, but I don't think you should have one. So, and this takes into account also compliance issues, because in pediatrics we have a lot of problems mm-hmm. with not getting the medication. So maybe this is their preference, but this shouldn't be a prioritization.
Michael?
I've had a problem from the beginning whenever we bring up the word patient preferences, and I'm glad that it's being addressed. What I think to me should be stated in there is that we want to listen to the patient's preferences. It doesn't mean that we actually want to do them. They may be really bad ideas. And but the way these things read, it continues to read as if the, you know, the father knows best, the patient knows best. Now he may know least, but he does need to be listened to. Otherwise, you're not going to get cooperation. But I think all these measures, I think I don't think that I would want the public's conclusion that we think that the patient knows best, but that he should be. We should understand what the patient's coming from and what they want. And I felt the same way with the treatment plan that I said the last time, and that is that it's whose treatment plan. There may be three different ones of which they're different, and they conflict with each other. So it gets down to, again, you know, the treatment plan for the general problem of multiple diseases. But the patient preference thing, I certainly feel very strongly we need to reword that.
Thank you. Daniel?
Yeah, thanks. I agree very strongly with this notion of being very careful about patient preference. I raised that earlier, and I'm really glad that it's kind of here again in this fashion. But I also want to broaden that and just, again, focus on the issue of process. The notion of how do you judge all these things is inherently complicated. They're even more complicated on the Friday night when your own practitioner is off for the weekend or is on vacation. You're dealing in hospitals. I live in Massachusetts where everyone has insurance, and it's horrendous. There's a hospitalist that doesn't know you. There's a nurse that's floating that doesn't know you. There's family that's coming in from all over, each person having his or her own dynamics with the parent. So everything's flying in a way that's confusing, inherently confusing for that poor patient. Who has hit their own issues and their own distortion. So so this, again, is an abstraction. We're talking in theoretical terms that really have little bearing on what happens in the trenches when someone's sick. So then we should, I think, talk about process. Do these things get decided every year or every increment of time for each patient so that we have a plan? And I know some hospitals do this, but we don't have this on a national basis. And I think there are many more examples where these things are left in a very chaotic fashion than in a well-organized fashion.
Thank you. Gail?
I think maybe some of this could be really boiled down to the shared decision-making. I think that you cannot leave the patient out. I mean, to me, I guess because I spend so much time on the PCORI board issues, hearing you guys talk about that, well, we can't, and, you know, this is not up to the patient. All it's a 180-degree turn, what you're saying, from what the whole issues of patient-centered outcomes research is focused on, which is much more patient-centered, obviously. Maybe the compromise is the shared decision-making. But I think I see the patient preferences more in along the lines of maybe functional things. The patient would like to be able to pick up his grandchild or something like that, rather than I want brand name medications versus generic medications. So maybe it's a question of sort of broadening the concept of shared decision-making, sharing it with the physician, but then also maybe having some examples that really clarify that we're not just talking about something like, you know, brand names versus generic. Yeah. But we're talking more about functional goals that are the patient preferences.
I think, well, just a little structural input. Thomas, Jeffrey, Robert, and then I'm going to recommend we take a 15-minute brain break and come back and look at what we may be able to recreate as flow, as we have some time to do that. Then we'll tackle risk adjustment stratification, because I know you're waiting for that. Thomas.
Yeah, I think we're all worried about the patient who wants his or her case and need it too, the strategic action that, and perhaps changing in concordance with consideration of a patient's preferences. So it's patient's not totally in the driver's seat.
Jeffrey.
Well, at the defense of the patient or client or person, the way I read this is from the provider side too, that I think we're always talking about the edges and trying to explain why we don't like this. Mm-hmm. I could tell you that in my state I'm looking at lymphoma management, and the maximum amount of PET scans is per client is 15 PET scans and 42 CAT scans in a 2-year period. And I can guarantee you that the client didn't want that. So when the recently reported in Annals of Internal Medicine where hospitalists are more likely to make referrals to the ER rather than the outpatient, or the discoordination between the hospitalists, I can guarantee you that that was provider sort of centric versus client centric. So I actually like this. Things like the RED program, reengineering discharges, or the STAR program, where we're controlling provider behavior as well as taking the client's expectations. So I look at this as in the middle, and I actually like this. Again, a little clunky, you know, and how this works with the decision aids and things like that, but I actually like it.
Thank you. Robert?
So I know we were supposed to be silent about how this actually gets implemented in terms of measurement, but sitting through this discussion, and it struck me when I first read this, this is a very individualized type of measurement. And so I keep trying to figure out how do you get population-based measures out of something like this, because if we're going to look at for an individual how to prioritize, what do we do then when we're trying to look across? So this is something that I'm struggling with, and I think it relates to many of the ways that this has been framed. So I know we're not supposed to address it, but somebody's going to have a tough time operationalizing this. So.
Thank you, Robert. All right, I think we're going to ask you to return. And we're going to ask your patience and your working happiness versus joy to return to these principles to see if we've begun to capture the great discussion. So which one do you want to bring? Right, Aisha's in control. On the left screen.
We could take down the right screen for now.
I bet somebody will ask for the right screen.
We're going to do a quick recap. Humbly.
We're humbly doing it.
There we go. Okay.
There you go. All right. Karen, do you want to lead us through this and then we'll...
Do you have that, Aisha? On yours?
I can say Aisha has it, but...
So we tried to humbly capture some of the core tenets that were brought up, and naturally we'll go back and try to make it a little bit cleaner, but we thought we might share those back before we moved on to the other ones. Okay. So we thought from the first one that we there was some, you know, how do we define shared accountability, and we wanted to speak more to collaboration and care coordination, and it wasn't only about these, you know, cascading up and down the different levels of systems, but it was also important that it was amongst providers, as Caroline pointed out. So we added some language around promoting collaborative care amongst and across providers, and also, as Q and others raised, that we would include additional stakeholders who would share in that accountability concept. I think that as we take this back as a team to bring back to you more clean, that we want to tease out the two concepts around care coordination at the provider level, as I mentioned before, between providers, but also this broader population type of thinking of multiple accountabilities. The tobacco example was given. And then I think really resounding clear, and not just for this first one, but because this first one's pretty encompassing, is that we need to capture this in the current realities. It's not that we don't think this is where we need to go and that it's a critical approach and it does align with the work we're also doing with our measure applications process, but that you know we need to speak of current state and pathway. So we will do that. Okay, the second one, and thank you, I had extra notes in there. I think we got a clear message to be a little bit more straightforward here. We agree to this multidimensional approach to measurement. We're bringing in, just as you brought up, we did use the National Quality Strategy language around better care, affordable care, healthy communities. She also raised the importance for us to, let's try to elevate affordable care and cost as best as we can when we have opportunity to, and that it should incorporate measures. Certainly we're emphasizing cross-cutting here, but that evidence-based, condition-specific, the various structural supports and the behavioral. And with the appropriateness, I put in parentheses overuse. I think what we're trying to get at here is, Barbara, as you raised, you know, requesting multiple MRIs that aren't needed, things of that. We'll work on that language. And naturally, the evidence base would be driving the appropriateness or overuse component. And then, as Caroline had suggested on the discussion around the shared decision-making and prioritization, we did a little bit of lumping. So I'm going to jump to the next slide. And this one feels still clunky, but we want to make sure we're getting your key concepts. We'll take it back. So here, once again, we're going back to assessing that kind of trifecta around access, quality, and cost, which we're putting in code under quality of care, that it should be prioritized based on the evidence to best achieve desired outcomes and take into consideration informed patient preferences. And this the step-by-step process that you want to make sure that a shared decision-making process took place. And ultimately, we know how hard this is, and I think that having done some work with the shared decision-making group who's doing research on this, how do you determine concordance and our preferences being informed are very difficult things. So we'll work with that language, but we want it to come and encompass the evidence-based focus on outcomes and the shared decision-making process taking place and pushing towards concordance with the evidence base in that. So it feels a little clunky, but I'm hoping we're getting some of the concepts that we could take back. So those are the top four, and of course we welcome your input. We thought since we've had such rich discussion, we might want to feed back some of that to you. Andrew?
Is it the goals of treatment which are prioritized, or is it the treatment which is prioritized on the evidence? It seems to me goals are patient-centric, patient-determined, and the patient always wins the goal statement. But there's shared decision-making around the treatment to achieve the goals in order, and part of that is the evidence, part of it is patient preference, part of it is resources, part of it, et cetera, et cetera. That's where evidence-based practice comes in. Treatment, not at goals. And some treatments have been shown to better deliver on some goals, but not nearly as much as we'd like to think. So that just may be parceled out. The other thing on a previous slide, if we use the word overuse, I'm wondering if we can use the mantra of overuse, underuse, and misuse, because we had I think it was Barbara who commented, you know, Some people over-treat and some practitioners don't even try, and we have both. So it's always overuse, underuse, and misuse of treatment.
Robert?
I just wonder if that word prioritize even needs to be there. Because you just, I mean, what the statement is about is you need measures that are evidence-based and consider preference. So is it really relevant?
Cynthia.
So my question relates to the same thing. I guess I wonder what we
where we say in assessing quality of care to persons with MCCs, measures should be prioritized. So there we're prioritizing measures. But I think that we mean a different thing by priorities in the last sentence. So not necessarily proposing an answer, but I think this relates to the same – well, actually, I think this is actually potentially bringing in a third type of prioritization. But I just think that we need to be really clear about what we mean when we say prioritize.
You're saying what gets prioritized,
yeah.
The measures, the treatment, the goals, what exactly are we prioritizing? Yeah, I think that's
true. And I think it's one of the things that we heard on the prior – well, and I guess the prior version of it is that we think that the patient's priorities should potentially inform the prioritization of which things are actually measured. you know, so that an individual level person's priority should potentially inform what things are actually measured on a population or a plan or a practice level. But I don't necessarily, that's definitely, I think, you know, very, very new and certainly very important and would be a great thing for there to be measured development on. But I don't think, I personally don't know that we want to be restricted to only having that because I think the field is probably, the field of measurement development is probably further away from knowing how to have an individual patient's priorities inform which measures apply to them.
Okay. Barbara. Emma? Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't think we want to lose care plan completely from these concepts because it seems like we're stripping it away from, you know, several of these guiding principles and, you know, noting the comment you made earlier that the intent was tying it to the patient-centeredness. And I know that it does come up quite a bit in the quality measurements work group of the HIT policy committee. And, you know, I think the theory is that as we move forward on the meaningful use measures, more of this comes into play coming off of electronic health records as opposed to traditional HEDA, so that the definition of care plan evolves from what you might think of it as today. I think the other piece that's lost here is the word relevant, because that's also a key component in some of the principles that come off of the quality measurements work group, and we want to keep that in mind.
Barbara?
So I agree. I think prioritize misplaced. I'm still a big fan of, instead of care plan, priorities of care or goals of care. I don't know. It has a connotation I don't resonate with. But so I would like to stick it someplace else, this prioritization. I don't think it fits there well. On the slide before, I really am not a fan of better care. I don't know whose shtick that is, but it seems too catchy. Yeah, right. I like rummy care. Yeah, right. Give me overuse any day.
Sorry, we took that from the National Quality Survey.
Thank you. You just said it for me. Thank you,
Jeffrey.
So I'm just wondering whether we could say to achieve the best desired outcomes and processes to take into consideration. The only reason why I'm saying that is because a lot of times everybody's got their favorite process, but when you look at the NNT and NNH for any processes, we typically tend to take the one that has the least effective versus the one that has the highest, the one that comes to mind. You know, if you want to solve the C-section problems, you go after DBAC, but nobody wants to take that on because that has an NNT of 3, but everybody says doula is the best thing, which has an NNT of 1 to 200. You know, so that's why I'm just, if you put processes in there, it speaks to me in addition to outcomes. So it would say to achieve the best desired outcomes and processes to take into consideration, or that take into consideration.
Yes, this would be the processes that were most strongly linked to getting those evidence-based outcomes.
Evidence.
We can put wording into that regard. Okay.
So,
yeah, I'm still struggling with prioritization because it has to be somewhere. And we may be going to get to this in 6 if we ever make it to slide 6. But, you know, again, getting back to the world of the provider and to someone like me who has major responsibilities in a health system and what can we do and what can we afford and what can we do. You know, if you don't prioritize what you get measured on, you're going to run into composites. And composites are good for some patients, but they're definitely not good for this crowd. So again, if you're going to argue against that maybe certain groups of patients can't be dealt with best, with that you're going to have unintended consequences if you're trying to measure on composites, we have to talk about priorities. And so I don't know exactly where it goes, and maybe it goes in 6, slide 6 when we get to it. But, you know, several different things have to get prioritized, including which denominator the patient gets into.
Okay. Well, with that, let's try 5, if you can pull up 5. And this is performance measures ideally assess care provided over extended periods of time and change over time. Input. I feel like an auctioneer going. Okay. Right. So with that, let's indeed go to 6.
I'm the people in Delta. Okay.
There you go. Six we should probably take in three pieces. I'm just going to. And the first is the overall statement. Any preamble from those involved in this?
I would be happy to comment on it.
Yes,
really,
yes, please. Okay, all right.
So for the first one, I'm assuming. So I think this is very interesting, and it actually relates to what Caroline just said. I almost think that you want a principle that in some way deals with both, that we think the patient priorities matter, but then at a population or plan or practice, whatever, system level, that we think there should be some work towards prioritization of measures, like which things are going to be measured and who they're going to apply to. I think this is very, this to me relates to that because it relates to one of the ways that you might prioritize or how to think about these populations. I think it's interesting because saying that you don't want to use denominator exclusions to me implies that we are nervous and perhaps appropriately about taking people out of the denominator. And I have great reservations about taking people out of the denominator if we don't figure out other ways to measure things instead. But I'm not sure that if we figure out other ways to measure people that we think might be higher priorities, and I'm talking about priorities at like the population or plan or whatever level when I say it there, that I think that we may be able to determine higher priorities for people rather than just leaving everyone who's in the MCC population in the denominator for every possible measure that might apply to them. So I'm not sure that I agree that denominator exclusions are always bad, or that they should always be addressed through stratification or risk adjustment. I think an example would be, I'm using a geriatric example, that's the world that I live in, but I think there's probably others, is if there are times that doing something is actually, I guess you might not have to set this up as a denominator exclusion, but doing, you know, colorectal cancer screening and then 87-year-old with multiple chronic conditions that are limiting their life expectancy. Like, I think that would be an appropriate thing where you would actually rather be measuring care on that person with something else.
Mm-hmm. Robert?
This is just a point of clarity, and is this only about the disease-specific performance measures? In this context, that's what I thought this applied to, is the disease-specific, because in that case what we're saying is don't exclude them, consider risk adjustment or stratification. But you're saying this is for all measures, because I would have assumed they're included in the cross-cutting regardless. So I think this is, we just need to be cleaner about the language here as to which measures we're actually referring to.
That's a really good point, because on the webinar we spoke to, perhaps we would have looked at stratifying the cross-cutting measures as well. There was some discussion around the functional status. I think a lot of this discussion naturally takes you to disease specific, because that's how we traditionally have done it. But I think further clarity there would be really helpful. And Cynthia, as you're saying, that I think the you don't want the pendulum to go too far, because we realize that often people with MCCs are out, and there's reasons why we might want them in, but there's reasons we might want them in. I'm just trying to see what we were saying from the webinar, so I think it might have, maybe the pendulum might have swung too far, but and I could see where you'd want to tease these both out. Is that what you were suggesting? Yeah.
I think he raises a great point. I think it reads partially that it's unclear, but also that it perhaps is too sort of strict. And that it probably depends on the type of measure more than there being sort of a universal thing that we always think stratification and risk adjustment are what you should do.
We're actually offering three options here. We're saying leave them out, you know, stratify or risk adjust. So, but I think we need to be clear about where we're doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually think that this would be the committee's major statement on all the disease-specific measures that are sitting around. I don't think it's exclusive to that because, for example, if there were some measure that addressed improving functional status and the person was at end of life and terminal, or if the person had advanced dementia, that measure might not apply. So there are some cross-cutting measures that you could think up that some that may either require denominator exclusion, risk adjustment, or stratification. But in general, I think this is our statement on disease-specific measures. And so I'll put that out there as a straw dog, and let's see what groups think. But I think that needs to be clarified. I think that was an excellent point.
Barbara? Andrew?
There's a specific methodological recommendation, but I don't know exactly what it's based on. Is it based on the fact that we have not successfully figured out methods of risk adjustment, or we don't know what the criteria are, good variables on which to adjust? Because then we end up with another set of statistical problems, which are highly stratified analyses, and I know there are trade-offs here, and I suspect there's a whole lot of thinking that went on to come to this conclusion that actually stratification was preferable, but there's a trade-off. And it's, you know, multiple equations versus the big grand one from a research perspective. So can I hear more?
So I don't know that I'm the certainly Helen Burston from NQF would potentially want to weigh in on this. But so one thing that's not here as you spoke, which I've heard her mention, is that we probably want to make a distinction between processes and outcomes, which is not currently listed here, that in general they're nervous about, let me make sure I get it right, risk adjusting on processes, which is not here, which but that outcomes, if your quality, if your performance measure is based on outcomes, there may be more value. I think that the reason that stratification is elevated over risk adjustment to some degree here, although I'm certainly not the main authority on this, is that in part because there are sort of more methodologic issues of that we don't really know exactly what we're doing when we're using like a complex risk adjustment model and what should we be using, where stratification allows you to sort of see it, you know, at two or three levels, as opposed to saying we can come up with one answer that applies to everyone if we just risk adjust this way. I think that's the reason.
I can bring forth some of the thinking, as Cynthia mentioned. My colleague Helen Burston is leading a group that's doing a lot of thinking around this, our disparities work group. And I guess, and what we were trying to, of course, collate from the group, a concern with the risk adjustment, particularly for MCCs, is that you might, or other populations, I know our dual population was looking at this, that as with any risk adjustment, you could risk adjust what you might want to assess and monitor. You risk away the risk, and then you wind up not being able to see where there are disparities. That there are two schools of thought there. But you know, the argument for risk adjustment is that certainly as a provider, you don't want to get I don't know how else to say it more elegantly. You don't want to get dinged for caring for a more complex patient population. So at the program level, whether you're applying it for payment or other initiatives, you know, risk adjustment makes a lot of sense because you don't want to potentially induce an unintended consequence of adverse selection. However, so that's the two sides of the argument there. If you stratify, at least you're going to be able to see where those differences occur, and then you could target your QI or whatever, not in a perfect way. Both of them have methodological things, I know, or, and I'm just sharing with you some of the thinking, so you can stratify so that you can, and then you address at the programmatic level, you know, the risk adjustments, which we know is imperfect in many ways and all those caveats, but it was kind of the thinking that we want to be able to monitor the at different levels, whether it's by disability, et cetera, how progress is going along, not to the exclusion of risk adjustment never, ever being done.
If I can just respond, because I am by no means a methodologist, trust me. statistician is always my best friend. My concerns would really be with stratification. You're going to have a much larger sample, or you're going to run out of cells. You may draw erroneous conclusions because how many dimensions are you going to try to stratify along? And I do think that the literature on outcomes would suggest that some variables of importance to outcome studies, some of the interactions are additive, some are multiplicative, and some are complex. And particularly concerned that only some values, some ranges of value for some variables are interactive with other ranges. So, you know, it's the range of low education, what degree of poverty, et cetera, what degree of alcoholism, what degree of social support become critical for understanding outcome, and that they're not strictly, these relationships, the literature suggests, are not strictly linear. And to get into highly complex issues that are probably best decided at the moment you have your data or are planning your analysis versus making a blanket recommendation that stratification is to be preferred, I think statistically doesn't sit as easily.
Daniel?
Again, acknowledging that I too lack a certain sophistication to address this. The one thing which I do hear and think about is the difference in what people would regard as relevant. So the notion of the data will vary depending upon the clinician. So, you know, what the parsonist will see as being the most important issue will vary. So the notion of the risk assessment, I think it's, you know, it starts from a premise that I think no one can agree on. So with that, I write in a very, I feel like it's a very superficial sense of the depth that Andrew was just speaking to. But if you stratify, at least it becomes a source of a dialogue, mm-hmm. understanding which clinicians identify which things is important. Because mm-hmm. I doubt anyone's going to agree.
Jeffrey?
Well, I want to agree with Cynthia. I would really like to see performance measures, parentheses, outcomes and processes. Because I think we keep going down that rabbit hole. You can't measure me because the data, I'm better, mine is sicker. And mm-hmm. so that would be one is I would like to see, and it's going to be especially critical in these because we are dealing with smaller numbers. Mm-hmm. It's the 550, the 5%. And then when you start to get cell sizes down to combinations of diseases, it's going to get really difficult. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to distinguish really off, you know, that I think, for example, all multiple chronic conditions that go into hospitals ought to have a process, like RED or STAR. And I think everybody would agree with that. When you get into outcomes, then it starts to get a little bit, and I don't know if this is a little bit in the weeds, but I am a statistician too.
Oh, good.
Well,
you're my best friend.
Well, no, but this is one of the things that we always miss. This is a little weeds, I'm sorry, but if we come in with a measure that, you know, that is highly specific, which has a low degree of false positives, mm-hmm. then can we say that you will never be measured off of one measure? We will then ask you to come up with a highly sensitive measure that will then justify why you are either aberrant or in control. And that's and so on statistics, if you come in with a serial analysis, you can get to almost 100%. But if you're always looking for the highly sensitive, highly specific test, it ain't ever going to happen, and especially in this population. That's a little bit in the weeds, but it's something that I'm sort of working on, where if I'm going to measure you, I'm always going to give you a second chance, and I'm going to measure you with a highly specific, and then I'm going to come in with a highly sensitive. If I were off, this is how we do drug testing in the United States. You know, you do a screen, and then you do it, and then you do it. A highly sensitive test. And I think that's the way we should start to look at this, but again, it's a little bit weeds. Sorry.
Yeah, because I think this weeds actually reinforce our earlier principle around that the measurement needs to be multidimensional, that you would never make a decision based on one variable. So I think that's really actually good substrate for the narrative. Thank you.
Robert?
So,
I'm wondering as a committee if we can recommend a more balanced approach here and actually put in a C which suggests that research should be done to determine whether stratification or risk adjustment is the appropriate methodology. Because I don't think the answer is here today as to which way to go here. So it would be good to make the recommendation.
Great. Fiona?
Don't know the answer to the question, but I'd like you to consider for children again. There, in contrast to congestive heart failure and diabetes and things that are very common in adults, in children we'll see populations of relatively uncommon conditions, many uncommon conditions. And so I'm not sure if how feasible the stratification would be, and would like you to consider that if you really want to have something go across the lifespan.
So it's just addressing the low-frequency conditions.
Mm-hmm. Which are probably the dominant.
Caroline?
Well, actually, I'm going to resonate with that low-frequency because, a lot of patients with multiple chronic conditions also have some low-frequency conditions that are, or a dominant condition that's sort of contributing to their problem. So I think that would be an issue for all ages. How do we deal when the low-frequency conditions are contributing to the multiple chronic conditions? So that's why I wanted to go back to the denominator exclusion issue. I know everyone hates it, and mostly we hate this denominator exclusion because it's an excuse. When my patient's too sick, we're taking them out of the denominator. And the issue is, if they go out of the denominator of one measure, they should go into the denominator of another. No patient should not have measures. So I want to capture that because that may be the way you deal with these low-frequency conditions, that they don't belong here, they belong there. And I don't know, and maybe there needs to be research to figure out how to actually do that or articulate that in some way that's understandable. But, the other thing that has come to mind when you think about populations, and again, people have pointed out that there is confusion between the population and the individual. I don't know if we can really resolve that in this committee. I think that's sort of always going to exist, and that may have to get really brought out in the framework discussion in the paper. But one of the things that happens is it's a difference in targets. I mean, if you have an academic health system, if you're looking at a measure of an academic health system, perhaps their target is lower because they have so many sick patients. So that's another way to handle it, is that you would assume a proportion of patients that don't fit, for example, composite measures. And that's one of the things we're fucking with CMS about on the ACO world. Yes, maybe we for commercial patients, composite measures are fine, but we have X percentage of really complicated patients, so our target should be lower. So that's another way that maybe research would inform the best way to handle this. And it may be different for different types of patients and different on whatever level you're measuring.
Margaret?
I just have a point of information. I'm not familiar with the term shadow conditions.
Yeah, that's in one of the texts. I wasn't sure about that either.
It was in one of our. It was in the. It was one of the listings of the in our key issues document.
Sorry.
I'm not actually sure what it means in this exact context, but we can follow up with you.
Right. Well, either way, we know we need to make it clear. That's right.
So,
Jeffrey?
So I like that idea of if it can't be in the outcome, there has to be a process. I think in pediatrics, an excellent example is all pediatric oncology is pretty much on protocol. All adult oncology is pretty much off protocol. So if you can't do an outcome because, there's just too rare a condition, then you ought to have a process. And I think pediatrics sort of leads in that.
Leona?
In oncology. I don't think there's a neonatal network that has certain things, but not in everything. But oncology is a good example.
Cynthia?
So this referred to things that we, like frailty or obesity, and so I think that in terms of making it more operational, they might be hard things to stratify on, but they were sort of those things that in the background may make it, may make a person, a measure, apply more or apply less, but that aren't really sort of very well operationalized, how you actually operationalize. But I agree that when you revise it, we should aim for, clarifying.
Well, we made it through the principles. Yes, please.
Thank you for bearing with us, but we want to make sure we capture capture what we've heard. I just wanted to feedback because I think Caroline brought up an important distinction, and we'll tease this out further. I think that overarching is that certainly we want to be able to discern and be able to track and monitor across these different examples that are listed here. This would be important to do. But I think that it was important that for the beginning piece that was asked earlier, Jeff, that, you know, that around these disease-specific measures that, as Caroline points to, that, you know, if as opposed to routinely excluding them, we should look whether they should be excluded. And if they should be, if there's rationale for it, that we should look for measures where they should be included, because the big takeaway is that this population needs to be measured. And we'll try to capture that in a much more elegant way, but at the moment that's the best I can sympathize. And then I think, too, this, you know, that we're not really risk adjustment and stratification have pros and cons, both statistically and philosophically, and that we would need further research to inform this. But is the message, as I'm hearing from the group, is that we feel that we should discern so that we can make sure that disparate groups don't remain disparate. Okay, great. So we'll take that back. Thank you. Shaking heads.
So now we have, there's...